So please listen attentively to this verse and purport, because in the purport, Srila Prabhupada explains from his own experience why some people leave the association of devotees, which leads to further calamities. Sounds a little dark. I don't mean to be dark, but so this is the third verse of the ninth chapter, the most confidential knowledge. Please repeat after me. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Please repeat. Ashradadana.
Ashradadana.
Purusha.
Purusha.
Dharmasya.
Dharmasya.
Asya.
Asya.
Parantapa.
Parantapa.
Aprapya.
Aprapya.
Mam.
Mam.
Nivartante.
Nivartante.
Mrityu.
Mrityu.
Samsara.
Samsara.
Vartmani.
Vartmani.
Ashadadana Purusha.
Ashadadana Purusha.
Dharmasyasya Parantapa.
Dharmasyasya Parantapa.
Aprapya Mam Nivartante.
Aprapya Mam Nivartante.
Mrityu Samsara Vartmani.
Mrityu Samsara Vartmani.
Ashradadana Purusha.
Ashradadana Purusha.
Dharmasyasya Parantapa.
Dharmasyasya Parantapa.
Aprapya Mam Nivartante.
Aprapya Mam Nivartante.
Mrityu Samsara Vartmani.
Mrityu Samsara Vartmani.
Ashradadana.
Ashradadana.
Those who are faithless.
Those who are faithless.
Purusha.
Purusha.
Such persons.
Such persons.
Dharmasya.
Dharmasya.
Toward the process of religion.
Toward the process of religion.
Asya.
Asya.
This.
This.
Parantapa.
Parantapa.
O killer of the enemies.
O killer of the enemies.
Aprapya.
Aprapya.
Without obtaining.
Without obtaining.
Mam.
Mam.
Me.
Me.
Nivartante.
Nivartante.
Come back.
Come back.
Mrityu.
Mrityu.
Of death.
Of death.
Samsara.
Samsara.
In material existence.
In material existence.
Vartmani.
Vartmani.
On the path.
On the path.
Translation. Those who are not faithful in this devotional service cannot attain me, O conqueror of enemies. Therefore, they return to the path of birth and death in this material world. Please repeat. Those who are not faithful,
in this devotional service,
cannot attain me, Krishna.
O conqueror of enemies.
Therefore they return to the path of birth and death.
In this material world.
Purport. The faithless cannot accomplish this process of devotional service. That is the purport of this verse. Faith is created by association with devotees. Unfortunate people, even after hearing all the evidence of Vedic literature from great personalities, still have no faith in God. They are hesitant and cannot stay fixed in the devotional service of the Lord. Thus, faith is a most important factor for progress in Krishna consciousness. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is said that faith is the complete conviction that simply by serving the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna, one can achieve all perfection. That is called real faith. As stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam 4.31.14, Yata taror mula nishechanena tripyanti tatskanda bujo pashaka pranopaharach chat yatendriyanam tatai vasarvarhanam achuteja. By giving water to the root of a tree, one satisfies its branches, twigs, and leaves. And by supplying food to the stomach, one satisfies all the senses of the body. Similarly, by engaging in the transcendental service of the Supreme Lord, one automatically satisfies all the demigods and all other living entities. End quote. Therefore, after reading Bhagavad Gita, one should promptly come to the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita. One should give up all other engagements and adopt the service of the Supreme Lord Krishna, the personality of Godhead. If one is convinced of this philosophy of life, that is faith. So each of us can consider, do we have that faith? And that faith is the qualification for engagement in pure devotional service, which Srila Prabhupada and our parampara teach, and which the Krishna consciousness movement is meant to cultivate. Now, the development of that faith is the process of Krishna consciousness. There are three divisions of Krishna conscious men. In the third class are those who have no faith. Even if they are officially engaged in devotional service, they cannot achieve the highest perfectional stage. Most probably, they will slip after some time. They may become engaged, but because they haven't complete conviction and faith, it is very difficult for them to continue in Krishna consciousness. We have practical experience in discharging our missionary activity. That some people come and apply themselves to Krishna consciousness with some hidden motive, and as soon as they are economically a little well situated, they give up this process and take to their old ways again. It is only by faith that one can advance in Krishna consciousness. As far as the development of faith is concerned, one who is well versed in the literatures of devotional service and has attained the stage of firm faith is called a first-class person in Krishna consciousness. And in the second class are those who are not very advanced in understanding the devotional scriptures, but who automatically have firm faith that Krishna bhakti, or service to Krishna, is the best course, and so in good faith have taken it up. Thus they are superior to the third class, who have neither perfect knowledge of the scriptures nor good faith, but by association and simplicity are trying to follow. The third class person in Krishna consciousness may fall down, but when one is in the second class, he does not fall down. And for the first class person in Krishna consciousness, there is no chance of falling down. One in the first class will surely make progress and achieve the result at the end. As far as the third class person in Krishna consciousness is concerned, although he has faith in the conviction that devotional service to Krishna is very good, he has not yet gained adequate knowledge of Krishna through the scriptures, like Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. Sometimes these third-class persons in Krishna consciousness have some tendency toward karma yoga and jnana yoga, and sometimes they are disturbed. But as soon as the infection of karma yoga or jnana yoga is vanquished, they become second class or first class persons in Krishna consciousness. Faith in Krishna is also divided into three stages, as described in Srimad Bhagavatam. First-class attachment, second-class attachment, and third-class attachment are also explained in Srimad Bhagavatam in the 11th canto. Those who have no faith, even after hearing about Krishna and the excellence of devotional service, who think that it is simply eulogy, find the path very difficult, even if they are supposedly engaged in devotional service. For them, there is very little hope of gaining perfection. Thus, faith is very important in the discharge of devotional service. Translation again. Those who are not faithful in this devotional service cannot attain me, O conqueror of enemies. Therefore, they return to the path of birth and death in this material world. Krishna consciousness is a great science. It is a scientific process, and anyone who follows the process properly will achieve the desired goal. Now, there are people in any group who have different degrees of faith or lack of faith. We speak in an open assembly, and there are people who hear us speak, but are not very interested because they are not qualified for devotional service. And the first qualification is faith, ado shraddha. But there is a very interesting discussion about eligibility for devotional service in the 11th canto. And Lord Krishna says, yadrichaya matkatado, that those who somehow or other develop faith in my topics, katha, Krishna katha, and are not too attached to material enjoyment, and are not too disgusted with material life, they can achieve perfection through devotional service. Bhakti Yogasya Siddhartha. Now this is very interesting. We can understand that being too attached to material enjoyment would be an obstacle, but being too averse can also be an obstacle. Those who are too attached to material enjoyment will be inclined to karma, or the ordinary mentality of most people, to work and make money and spend money and enjoy. Those who are too averse, they will be inclined toward jnana. And here jnana means impersonal speculation. They are frustrated with material life, or disappointed with material life, or they've suffered so much in material life that they want to escape. They want to get out and merge and become one with the impersonal Brahman, or vanish into the void. So one must have faith, but at the same time, one should not be too attached to material enjoyment or too averse, but should be more in the middle. Now, sometimes a person will come with a glimmer of faith, but at the same time have those other inclinations, either for material enjoyment or impersonal liberation. But still, by good fortune, by the association of devotees, they are making an effort. They are engaged in devotional service. But by association with others who are strongly inclined towards karma, their own internal tendency towards fruitive activities can become more prominent. And when their desire for material enjoyment becomes more prominent, they can leave devotional service. The devotional service is not useful. Similarly, if someone has a tendency towards impersonal speculations that they hope will lead them to liberation, and they associate with people who have that same tendency or same idea, that can become more prominent than the desire to serve Krishna, and they can fall down. So, as Srila Prabhupada says in the beginning of the purport, faith develops in the association of devotees. And therefore, one should associate with devotees, pure devotees, who are not inclined towards fruitive work or impersonal speculation. Because by associating with pure devotees, one's little spark of faith will be fanned. But associating with devotees is also a science. One has to associate with them in the proper way, which means to hear from them, to inquire of them, and to serve them. And one should avoid at all costs committing offenses. Lord Chaitanya has compared the development of devotional service, which is really the development of faith, to the planting of a seed. Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavana Jeev Guru Krishna Prasade Thai Bhakti Lata Bhid. After wandering through the universes, one who is fortunate receives the seed of devotional service by the mercy of Guru and Krishna. And then Lord Chaitanya says one should become a gardener and plant that seed in one's heart and water it. And then he says that one should be careful of weeds, that there may be weeds that grow up alongside the devotional creeper. and distinguish between the weeds and the creeper. And he says sometimes the weeds are of the same size and the same shape as the devotional creeper. So it's very hard to distinguish the two. But if one is not careful, then the chanting and hearing about Krishna, if one is not careful, the watering will nourish the weeds. The weeds will suck up all the water, and the devotional creeper will be choked. So one has to be very vigilant to distinguish between the weeds and the devotional creeper. And because they can resemble each other, again, one needs the association of pure devotees who can distinguish the two and point out, this is a weed. You may think this is devotional service, but this is a weed. You're cultivating a weed here, and it's going to choke your devotional creeper. Then, Lord Chaitanya says that one should build a fence around one's devotional creeper to keep out a mad elephant. Now, so far, what I've described in the metaphor are things we can relate to in Dallas. Even we have a little garden across the street. We can relate to this. But a mad elephant, that seems a bit of a remote possibility in the Metroplex. But what the mad elephant is a metaphor for is a very real possibility. The mad elephant is Vaishnava aparadha, offense against devotees. And it's described that maddened elephant, he can enter a very well maintained and manicured garden and create havoc, uproot the plants, break them, create havoc. And so the effort that one has put into cultivating one's garden can be destroyed by that offense. So we have to be very, very careful of that offense. So we have to put fencing around the creeper. And what is the fencing? The fencing is the association of pure devotees. If we stay in the circle of pure devotees, there's no chance that mad elephant can enter and cause havoc. But again, staying in the circle means in the right mood, and the right mood of submission and inquiry and service. Otherwise, it can be taken as like some sort of social club. I'm as good as anyone else. I don't have to listen to anyone. That was Arjuna's thinking in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna was advising him, and Arjuna was thinking about it and disagreeing. And for every argument that Krishna had, Arjuna had a counter argument. And it was going like that back and forth. But at a certain stage, Arjuna realized that he's not getting any solution. You know, the war is imminent, and whatever thoughts and arguments he has rattling around in his brain are not going to help him. And then he gave up that mood of being Krishna's friend and equal, and surrendered to Krishna and became Krishna's disciple. Now I am confused about my duty. Now I am surrendering to you as your disciple. Please accept me. Shishyasteham shatimam tvam kripanam. Then, when he surrendered to Krishna and accepted Krishna as his spiritual master, then Krishna began to speak the knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita. Up until then, they were just talking like friends back and forth. But when Arjuna realized, I'm not getting any profit by, you know, this back and forth as if we're both equals, and surrendered to Krishna as spiritual master, then Krishna could speak the Bhagavad Gita to him. Then he asked questions. The Bhagavad Gita is full of Arjuna's questions and Krishna's answers, but the mood was different. It was submissive. Tadvidi pratipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninas tadvadarshan. Tadvidi pranipat. First is pranipat, surrender. That's the first thing. That's the beginning. Surrender. Tadvidi pranipatena pariprasnena. Then you can ask questions. If you're not going to accept the answers, what's the use of asking the questions? You're just wasting your time and wasting the spiritual master's time. So, and sevaya, seva, service. Srila Prabhupada said one should serve the spiritual master like a menial servant without false prestige. It's a very important point. And in the Vedic system, when someone comes to the guru, he renders menial service. When I joined the Boston Temple and my parents saw me for the first time, especially my father, he was appalled because the circumstances were also such that I was like the oldest son in not just my father's family, but the whole clan. And I was going to be the first one to graduate from the university, so it was a big thing. And my grandmother was going to come in from Chicago. So when my father came, and mother, he saw that I was peeling potatoes and cutting vegetables in the kitchen. So he thought, you know, I spent so much money, you know, to put my son through his education, and he got all these honors and distinctions. And now he's peeling potatoes in the kitchen? You know, what is this? And, but that was the system. Even if you were the son of a king, you would do menial service in the ashram of the guru. That was the system. And later, I was very happy to see baby, you know, maybe 6 months later, 8 months later, someone found a quotation from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur that washing the pots is a very good engagement for any new person who comes to the ashram. And that was like posted over the big sinks we had for washing the pots. I mentioned cutting. If he knew the other things I was doing, it would have been even worse. Washing the pots, cleaning the toilets. But so this is seva. As Prabhupada says, one should serve the spiritual master like a menial servant without false prestige. And that humility is necessary for making progress. In Bombay, Srila Prabhupada had a very special friends, and there's one lady, Dr. Indira Sringi. She never married. She's a very pious, pure lady. And, she had two brothers. They owned a hotel. And, so anyway, she told Prabhupada that I have ideas, you know, by which your movement can make money. And that way, your disciples won't have to go out begging anymore. And Srila Prabhupada said, I want them to go out begging because that produces humility. That's also part of the system of serving the guru. You beg. Of course, Prabhupada adapted that in a better way. Not just begging, but distributing books. It's the same in the sense that you request a donation, but you also give them the highest knowledge of Krishna consciousness. Or in India, it was adaptive life membership. They would give a bigger amount and get a set of books. So that humility is required to make progress. Faith and humility go together. Someone who's, yes, this is a very interesting thought, that Lord Chaitanya composed 8 verses called the Shikshastaka. And Srila Prabhupada said that the whole philosophy of Krishna consciousness is contained in the 8 verses. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's followers, especially the 6 Goswamis, have written volumes and volumes of books, you know, pursuant to those 8 verses. So one disciple asked Srila Prabhupada that accepting a spiritual master is so important in Krishna consciousness, but we don't see it anywhere in the Shikshastaka. Is it there? And Srila Prabhupada said, yes, it is there. Trinadapi suniche na. That one should be more humble than the grass. That if one is humble, one will realize that he needs a spiritual master. So the two go together. And the more one becomes humble, the more he can absorb the knowledge of Krishna consciousness and realize the beauty of Krishna consciousness. So here, Srila Prabhupada mentions people coming with hidden motives. There can be so many different types of hidden motives. And depending on how covered we are, we ourselves may not even be conscious of our motives. But yeah, people, well, there's endless varieties of motives. It's endless. But yeah, one is economic. Or sometimes it happens, it's just endless. A boy could be looking for a girl could be looking for a boy. People could be looking for prestige, they could be looking for, you know, like social group, just so many. And if they get what they want, they may go away. If they got what they want, they don't need Krishna consciousness anymore. Or if they think they're not going to get what they want, they may go away. I think, am I getting it here? I'll have to get it somewhere else. So that's why we have to purify our hearts of these ulterior desires. But we have to want to. You have to want to. But sometimes even if you don't begin with the desire of purifying your heart, by good association, that's the whole point about the association of pure devotees, by good association you may give up those other desires. Lord Chaitanya says, if one approaches me for some material gain, certainly he is very foolish. He uses the word murka. Because he could be getting ambrosia. But instead he's asking for poison. But I am very intelligent, and I will deal with him in such a way that he will forcibly drink that ambrosia and forget that those material desires. So that is the Lord's mercy. He's always thinking of how to do good for the fallen souls, how to do good for us. And he will make arrangements. He'll make arrangements. But even then, we have our free will, but he'll make arrangements that will make it easier for us, knowing our mentalities, make it easier for us to surrender. To give up our vain pursuits and surrender to the real benefit of life. Srila Prabhupada had a student in Delhi who was translating his books into Hindi. And the boys father was, he liked Prabhupada. I mean, most people did. And so he came to see Prabhupada. It was after the first Delhi Pandal. So he had a weakness. His weakness was smoking. So Srila Prabhupada asked him, have you given up smoking? Prabhupada was very direct. He didn't waste time. And yeah, if someone couldn't take it, okay, that's all right. They're free to go wherever they want. But he wasn't going to waste his time, He would try, of course. He would preach very intelligently. And personally, he was very charming. But he didn't beat around the bush. So he asked the boy's father, what about your smoking? Have you given it up? And the man looked down and said, no, Prabhupada, I haven't. Can't you give me some special mercy? He perhaps was thinking, some people have this idea that, like, the sadhu will zap him, and then he'll give up smoking. So he said, no, Prabhupada, I need some special mercy. And Prabhupada said, oh, special mercy. Yes, there is such a thing as special mercy. Then he quoted a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam. Yasyaham anugrihanami harishe tadanam shanai. Krishna says that when I'm especially mercifully inclined to some devotee, the first installment of my special mercy is that I take away everything from him. And then when he's rejected by his family members and friends and society, I give him the intelligence to surrender to my devotees. So, do you want that special mercy? Said, no, Prabhupada, no. I'll do it myself. So, but it happens. Prabhupada related that verse to his own situation. He was a very prosperous, he was in the pharmaceutical industry, so he was very prosperous. And suddenly, at a certain stage, everything started going wrong with his business. And whatever he did to build it up, it just kept getting torn down. And he thought of that verse. Because even as a grihastha, he was absorbed in chanting, reading Srimad Bhagavatam, and trying to serve devotees, serve his spiritual needs. So he was aware of that verse, and he kept thinking, is that happening to me? Maybe that's what Krishna's doing. And he writes about it in his books that if Krishna sees that one is sincere but still has material attachments, and the material attachments are getting in the way of one's spiritual progress, Krishna will take away the objects of one's attachment or somehow break the attachment. And then one gains so much more. Srila Prabhupada said, Krishna never takes anything away from a devotee except to give the devotee something better. And I've quoted this instance. When I was first coming to the Boston Temple, one man in the audience asked Srila Prabhupada, are you happy? Are you happy? And Srila Prabhupada said, when I lived in India, I had 5 children, and there were always so many problems. But since surrendering to Krishna and engaging in Krishna's service and coming to America, now I have 500 children, and they love me and I love them, and there is no problems. So he was saying that one who surrenders to Krishna is not the loser, but he's gains by hundreds and millions of times. And the man said, well, that's a material example. And Srila Prabhupada said, I have many platforms of happiness which you cannot understand. But I've given an answer on your platform, that you can understand. And many times Prabhupada said that, like, you know, the one who surrenders to Krishna is not the loser, but he gains by many times, and he spoke from his personal experience. And he, so that's one test. You know, Krishna takes away something material from you. So that's a test. Are you going to stay with Krishna and let that go? Are you going to chase after it and leave Krishna? Well, that's one test. Then the other test is Krishna gives you a lot. So then are you going to enjoy what Krishna gave you and forget Krishna, or are you going to stay with Krishna? And that happened to Prabhupada later. Krishna gave him everything. And Prabhupada commented that in the beginning, Krishna tested me by taking away everything. And later, he tested me by giving me everything. And obviously, Prabhupada remained, he was like completely attached to Krishna. There's no question of any alternative. But he said that Krishna tested me both ways. It's very tricky. One godbrother gave a class in Juhu about a disciple of Prabhupada's. And during Prabhupada's presence, his father had tried to bribe him, you know, like give him a large amount of money to get him to leave Krishna consciousness. And in Prabhupada's presence, he refused. But no. Then later, his father died and left him a big inheritance. And then when he got the inheritance, he left Krishna consciousness. So this godbrother commented that what his father couldn't do during his lifetime to get his son to leave Krishna consciousness, he was able to do after his death, you know, by leaving him that inheritance. So we're always being tested. We're always being tested. We're always being given things. That's a test. And things are being taken away, and that's a test. And the ultimate test is the time of death. Our body is going to be taken away. Compared to the loss of our body, everything else is insignificant. You know, your money, your house, and anything. Any calamity is insignificant on a personal level compared to the calamity of dying. There was a gag with Jack Benny. I mentioned this once. But it was quite. He was known, but this became like a classic. This became a classic. He was a comedian, and this was how it happened. Is many of these people began on radio, and then when television came, then they moved to television. So he was on radio, and you know, this like hoodlum, you know, speaking in like a gangster voice, says, "Your money or your life?" And Jack Benny is silent. His persona was as a miser. So he was silent. He said, "Buddy, I said your money or your life." Again, he was silent. He said, "I'm not kidding. I said your money or your life. I'm going to take action if I don't get an answer from you." And he said, "Hold on. I'm thinking about it." So it's like a joke, because who's going to, like, you know, it's ludicrous. Who's going to give up their life for their money? They won't even be able to enjoy their money. So that's So that's the ultimate test. Okay, Krishna takes away this, Krishna takes away that. Are we going to fight Krishna to hold on to whatever, our false possessions, false prestige, false association? And that's all preparation. These tests are good. In school, the children are tested. Do you go to school? Do you go to school? Do you get tests? And what do you do before the test?
Study.
That's it. Tests are important because they force us to study, to learn, to be prepared. So all these little tests are meant to teach us things so that at the time of the final exam, at the time of death, we'll be able to remember Krishna. That's the ultimate test. Every test is ultimately, are you going to remember Krishna or forget him? Are you going to stay with Krishna or go somewhere else? And then that's the final test. And if you pass that, then you go back home, back to Godhead. So, yes, faith and association, the two go together. Hare Krishna. Maharaj, would you like to add anything, or should we can have questions?
Can I ask a question?
I guess not.
So, thank you so much for such a nice talk, Maharaj. I have a few points that I wrote down. I was thinking that if you think it's a good idea, when you were mentioning weeds that look the same as devotional service, so maybe either you can elaborate or maybe some of the devotees can come up with some of those weeds that look like devotional service. Because sometimes maybe the devotees don't really have a good grasp on that. And maybe I was thinking it'd be nice to discuss it just a little bit more.
That's true. Well, Lord Chaitanya says that there are unlimited varieties of weeds, but he mentions six as examples. Of course, in broad categories, there's material desires for enjoyment and the material desire for impersonal liberation. But then he mentions six. Do any of our learned devotees know any of those six? Huh? Yes. Puja. That means the desire to be worshipped. Then?
Man.
No, love.
Man and
no. Pratishtha, yes. Pratishtha is the desire for position. And love is the, that one you missed. That's the desire for, like, profit. Profit, adoration, and distinction. Yeah, very good. Very good. Then there's kutinati. Kutinati. Fault finding. This is a very convenient device to deflect attention from one's own faults, and that is to find faults in others. There's also diplomatic behavior. The two sort of are related, actually. Diplomatic behavior. Duplicity. showing oneself in one way, but actually being something else, like that, having some hidden motive. And then jiva-himsa. Jiva-himsa is usually taken, I mean, literally, it's like violence. Himsa, violence. Jiva to other living entities. But Srila Prabhupada and our acharyas relate it to a broader definition of violence. You know, on the gross level, it means, you know, killing someone, killing an animal, eating the flesh. Jiva himsa. But our acharyas explain that the real life of the living entity is devotional service. That's real life. Anything else is not real life. And so, to deprive someone of devotional service is himsa, it's violence. Because you're taking away their chance to live. And so, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur say that stopping the preaching of Krishna consciousness is jiva himsa. So if we're not preaching, it means, you know, it's like if someone's dying and you can save the person and you just let the person drown. It's like violence, indirectly, it's violence. So people are drowning in the ocean of birth and death, and you can save them by presenting Krishna consciousness. So if you stop the preaching of Krishna consciousness, that's jiva himsa. That's a very good question. You could probably add to that answer.
Well, so based on those weeds, what you were mentioning before is that devotees, sometimes they think what they're doing is devotional service, and it's actually a weed. So those are general examples you gave of weeds. So in relation to what you were saying, that, for example, if someone wants to be the temple president, I don't know who would, but
God help them.
So, and you were saying you have to have expert association so that someone can help you understand, well, this is actually, this won't be devotional service, this is actually a weed. Maybe that's not a good example.
No, it's a perfect example. It's a perfect
example. Okay, so then, because we're not pure devotees, sometimes our motives are a little bit mixed also. That, just like the devotees who went on book distribution, to be number one. So that's a we, at the same time they're distributing books. And so they just have to be careful that they don't water the weed, even though the desire is there. They have to be careful to concentrate more on being compassionate and distributing books. That's sort of like an example that we might think of.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering if there are other examples that come up from time to time.
Everything we do, we're prone to get attached to it. Anything that brings us any sort of happiness or support, we're prone to get attached to. It's just our nature. So it's related to the initial discussion about the eligibility for devotional service, not to be too attached or too averse. Because Rupa Goswami, after listing the 64 items of devotional service, he discusses items that he didn't include in the list, and then he explains why he didn't include them. And one of the items is the cultivation of renunciation. And he explains that if someone practices artificial renunciation, it can make their hearts hard. And the nature of bhakti by nature is soft. So, and the real process is chanting and hearing about Krishna that makes the heart soft. So then he says, well, if renunciation is not an item, then what's the alternative? Enjoyment? Well, obviously it can't be enjoyment. You know, there's a verse in the Bhagavatam that if you desire to go east, how can you achieve it if you go west? So it's like if you desire to achieve Krishna, how could you achieve it by going for material enjoyment? So then he explains about yukta vairagya. This is such an important principle, such an important principle. Anasaktasya vishayam. The very first line of the definition is without attachment to the objects of the senses, one accepts everything in relation to Krishna in the mood of service. And that is yukta vairagya, appropriate detachment. So that principle affects every aspect of our life, because we're prone to get attached to anything. Anything that gives us a little pleasure, a little encouragement, we get attached. So the solution is not necessarily to reject those things, but to see them as Krishna's energy, as Krishna's property, to be engaged in Krishna's service. Like one man, sort of a proud man, wealthy man, he came to Srila Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, the spiritual master of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And you know how materialists are. They come to the sadhu, they want blessings. I'm getting married, I'm going to have a baby, my child's having an exam. They want blessings. So he came with his new wife. He said, this is my new wife. And Srila Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj said, that is very good news. You should see her as Krishna's servant, and you should serve her. And you should cook for her and clean the house and do everything to please her, because she is Krishna's servant. So, you know, these saintly persons, they know people's mentality. He was probably thinking, oh, I have a wife now, she'll cook for me, she'll clean, she'll be my slave. So, but he reversed it, that she's Krishna's servant, and you should serve the servant of Krishna, which is true. It's a philosophical truth. And so in that mood, all of our relationships are okay. The wife is a devotee. Wife is a servant of Krishna. The husband serves the wife. The children are becoming servants of Krishna, so the parents serve the children to help them become better servants of Krishna. The husband, the servant of Krishna, the wife. So, and that's like, that way our relationships remain pure. And same with all of our possessions. To see it as Krishna's and meant to be used in Krishna's service. If it's not useful in Krishna's service, then we have no attachment for it. But otherwise, yeah, it's very easy to rationalize enjoyment and possessing and controlling, I guess, devotional service. Like, know, they're worshiping me, it's good for their spiritual advancement. They're serving me, it's good for their spiritual advancement. These are weeds, they're very, very bad weeds. Yes, Ajamil, Prabhu.
Yes, you see the kutimati, like all fighting is very dangerous. Obviously, question about Parah. But I don't know, sometimes could be some confusion come, like sometimes some people may not like the authority, certain things they speak out. So when they speak out, the authority don't like. So I don't know that it could be going another way, why the authority also can think. You say, saying things, why? For me or my management, am I doing right or wrong? Instead of asking that question, they take it in a different way, like offending way that I'm doing right and he's always criticizing me. So sometimes these things happen, we don't know which right, which wrong. Maybe he's wrong criticizing and kutinati. But at the same time, the person, like the society, is a devotee, he loves Prabhupada, he wants to do service. Maybe certain things, confrontations come, like we are nobody is in such a pure devotional service that nobody is in nobody's fault. So, how you deal with that?
How does who deal with it? I'm not involved in that scenario.
But I'm thinking, I want to know how a person should deal with that. I know it is.
Well, if someone, you know, if someone has a genuine constructive criticism, we should listen to it and see if we can improve.
Sometimes there is a friction happens.
Well, we should all be introspective. The person who sees the fault should look into himself and think, am I envious?
Yes.
Am I jealous? Is that why I'm seeing it? Or is it really
both ways,
for Krishna?
Both ways.
And same thing, if someone makes constructive criticism, I should also be instructive and think, well, maybe I'm doing something wrong. Or maybe I do need to improve.
Yeah. It goes both ways.
Yeah.
Not
yeah.
one way. That's
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yes.
Can it be considered jiva himsa to not offer constructive criticism?
Well, it depends on what the situation is and what your relationship with the person is. But the Bhagavatam gives an example that if a person is running headlong toward the end of a cliff and he's going to fall down to his death, so the Bhagavatam says, what sane and compassionate person will just allow him to do that? So yes, if someone's going in a dangerous direction, we should say something to save them. Yes, definitely. Yes, Rasa Sundari.
When you were talking about that Krishna took something away from the devotee, so that what if the devotee is not capable of seeing this? So maybe he has this attachment, and he's so attached to it, and Krishna is taking it away, but maybe because of his attachment, he cannot understand, so that maybe he goes away from Krishna consciousness. So it's like Krishna takes away from the devotee from whom he knows he's capable of overcoming it, or of him.
Well, yeah, it's a test. It's a test. Krishna takes something away. The idea is to make the person more attached to Krishna, but it's a test. So if the person isn't maybe sincere enough or humble enough or surrendered enough, then he'll, you know, chase after that material thing and leave Krishna. It's not automatic. Nothing's automatic. You always have your free will.
So then the association of the devotee can part of it, and maybe they can make the devotees see it.
Yeah.
They should rather not.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, Anandavila, last question.
Maharaj, you're saying that one can, while rendering devotional service, have ulterior motives without actually even being conscious that they have those motives because they cover this. So can becoming conscious and knowing that you may have that and have faith that, you know, by chanting and maybe rendering more service and just being aware that that could be possible, that you have those alternative motives, can that be a remedy for that insincere service, or what is an appropriate remedy for that?
That's part of the remedy. And the other part is, offenseless chanting and hearing, that desire and prayer to cleanse the heart of dirt. Generally, we have to do both. Yeah, make a conscious effort in terms of our service, and also take up that process of cleansing the heart by chanting and hearing. Serving also cleanses the heart. Also chanting the faith. And going on book distribution and Harinam Sankirtan. Mm-hmm. All right. Anything else, Maharaj?
Well, there's more, but it's a little late, so.
Yeah. Well, you two passed the test tonight. I asked you whether you get tested. At first I asked if you go to school, and you said yes. And then I asked if you get tested in school, and you said yes. And then I asked, what do you do for the test? And you said that you study. So you answered all the questions. Okay, so now what? Little kirtan? Or?